We've got a great week of programs for you here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back with our guest, Jeff Danilek. We'll take your phone calls. Ghosts and reincarnation next on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff, I didn't have time the first hour to talk with you now that we're open at open lines about haunted houses. Boy, they're out there, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Quite a few of them, too.
When have you ever been in one?
Well, when I go on these investigations with the paranormal group, that's what we go to. We go to haunted locations because that's where we're most likely to find paranormal activity. So, yes, I've been in a couple of them.
You ever see anything horrible happen?
Horrible? No, I'm afraid not. It's actually a lot of hours and hours of nothing happening with just a few minutes of maybe something interesting happening. It's almost like being in combat. You know, it's long times with nothing going on with a few minutes of terror.
But I've always told people that, you know, if they have a ghost in the house that's not really doing anything bad, big deal. Kind of fun, isn't it?
I think it depends on the person. If you have a type of personality where you're not easily frightened by things and you're not, you know, you have a pretty good sense of life and death and things like that, you have a pretty good handle on those. A ghost can be a very interesting thing to have living there. You can learn a lot about the afterlife just by kind of watching them, how they operate.
Would you like your house cleaned if it had a ghost?
I suppose in the long run you would be better off to have the ghost go just for its own good. You know, it needs to move on. And
of course, what about the good of the people too, huh?
Yeah, you know, if you want to ever sell a house and it's haunted, you know, that might be a bad sale point. So there's a lot of reasons that people want to clean the house, but I think that a lot of this cleansing stuff that you hear about is probably unnecessary. A lot of times people have great success just asking a ghost to leave, just explaining to it that it's, you know, it's their house now and it's time for them to move on. Quite often you can save yourself a lot of trouble by just, you know, talking to it like you would a normal person.
Yeah, and if that doesn't work?
Well, then you might need something a little bit more serious. Certainly if you're dealing with an angry or malevolent spirit, that's something that is going to be harder to remove. Very possessive ghosts, people who refuse to give up their homes, in which case they may need something a little bit more, a little bit stronger to get rid of them.
All right, to the phones we go. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
George and Jeff. Jeff, you had said earlier that we get kind of what we expect when we pass over, and I wondered if these Islamic suicide bombers, if they get their 72 virgins, you know, if that's what they actually find once they do.
I don't think they do. I think that's a myth.
Oh.
But go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I think that they may see what they expect to see, but I think very quickly what they wanted was maybe not that. You know, they might figure out fairly quickly that this was all an illusion. And then they would move on to really go through the process of life review after they got this sort of fantasy out of their system. But I really do believe that you create your own reality when you die. If you expect to see hell, if you expect to see paradise, I think that's what you will see. But I think you will very quickly realize that this is not ultimate reality. This is something that you have created out of your mind, and it's time to move on.
So you may have a brief time of nirvana, say, and then the reality hits home?
Yeah, I think that a lot of times we think that of a perfect situation, and then we find ourselves in it, and we find out it really wasn't as perfect as we imagined it would be. And then we kind of recognize that it's time to do something else.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Well, maybe those 72 virgins, maybe they all look like Medusa by the time they get there, huh?
They look like Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, exactly. There are always consequences. Serve them right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, good morning, George.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I got a great question. Okay. I got a friend that owns his own business. Very intelligent guy, perfectly sane, doesn't do drugs, doesn't drink, and he's experiencing what I think is a... His business is in a very old part of town where I grew up, and I've experienced it myself, but I think that his business is in a corridor or a portal, whatever you want to call it, where spirits or souls go from one, I guess, dimension to the next, and they're responding to him. And my question is this, is who can he contact to help him out with it, because they're actually now following him home. And this is a perfectly sane guy. He owns a business. He's very successful. He's a smart guy. And he's telling me these things, and I'm telling you, it's, what do you call it, a corridor or a portal or?
Portal, I would.
Yeah, because they're responding to him, because I told him some things to do, you know, like acknowledge to them that you know that they're there, and he tells them to respond to him, and he's getting responses. Now, it's not like he's getting voices, but they're tapping on him. I mean, they're actually tapping on his shoulder. They're pushing him through a room, leading him places, and it's just... You know, this is a perfectly sane guy, and my question is this, who can this guy contact to help him out with this problem?
Do you give out your email, Jeff? What do you do there?
Well, there are paranormal organizations in almost every city and state in the country. If you get on the internet and just type in paranormal organizations in your city, chances are you will hit one, and then these people always have contact numbers, and you can get a hold of them and explain the situation, and they will almost always respond pretty quickly and help you out as much as they can.
So you don't have a qualified list or anything you give out to people?
Well, the thing is, if I gave you, say, the group that I work with here in Denver, and this is happening in Detroit, that's not going to do you much good. So you need to kind of find a local group that deals with them. But every city and every state has a number of paranormal organizations that work with them.
Well, how do you know they're good?
Well, that's a little bit of a question. You have to see how long they've been in business, you know, how long they've been established, kind of the credentials of the people that are doing it. Do they come across as being kind of real new agey and flighty, or are they more scientifically oriented? There's two groups here in Denver. One that I work with is more scientific and more of a debunking group that looks for other explanations. And then the other group, I understand, is more mystical in nature and tries to cast things out all the time. So you really have to kind of do your research and you usually get an intuition or an instinct about a person or a group when you're dealing with them. You'll kind of get pretty quickly whether they know what they're talking about or they seem like they're just kind of having fun with it.
Do they charge you for this, Jeff, or do they all come in because they love it?
If they charge you for it, that's probably a good sign that this is not a good group or a legitimate group. Now, they should do this for free. Then they're doing it because they're trying to acquire evidence of the paranormal, but they also usually have people on their staff who deal with cleansings and things of that nature.
Good point. Next up, let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello, where are you calling from?
This is Heather in Calgary, Alberta.
Okay, Heather, go ahead.
And you were talking about young and old souls. I'm just wondering how a new soul is created and why new souls would be created when the world is so overpopulated.
Okay, well, actually, when you say a soul being created, that's kind of a misnomer. A young soul is not just like a soul that's just been created. A young soul is a soul that is beginning to generate incarnations into that particular place and time, on planet Earth, for example. It's just started the process. The soul itself is eternal and immortal. There wasn't a time when it didn't exist. In terms of population, the question is really how many people can the planet hold? We don't really know for a fact how many people it can hold. And the souls are on an agenda. They're trying to move through a series of experiences. And sometimes the experiences they want to be in involve a lot of other people. So there are times when you incarnate onto a planet with only a few hundred million people on it, and there are times when it's helpful to incarnate onto a planet of 10 billion people because you're going to get a different set of experiences.
Okay, thanks, Heather. Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, we'll go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Yes, hi, George. Good morning.
Hi.
I'm calling with a question for your guest. I wanted to find out if he's ever heard of this, of a departed soul leaving a voicemail on a cell phone, because that's what happened to me.
Now, that's interesting. Do you have that? Can we hear it by any chance?
Honestly, it faded away. I'll give you the quick story. My husband passed away tragically 6 weeks ago on the morning of our move from New York to West Virginia.
Oh, my. How horrible.
And 2 days after his funeral, I got a voicemail on my phone while I was talking to a friend of mine. And I couldn't quite hear it. It was like the worst connection you could ever possibly get. And the day before I got this voicemail, my daughter and I were at his grave, and I kept saying to him, just let me know you're okay. Just please tell me you're okay. And I listened to the voicemail. I could just about make it out. I dialed to see where the call had come from. It came from my husband's cell phone, which at that point was locked up in the suitcase, because the morning he passed away, we were ready to get in the car and move. So I'm listening. I call my daughter. She listens, and we can hear it. And I knocked on my neighbor's doors 10 o'clock at night, listened to this message. You could hear it say, Barbara, it's me. I'm okay. And as many times as I played it, every time I would play it, it would fade a little bit and a little bit.
And then he just went away.
And I'd have to put the boost on it to hear it again. And the last time I had it was the morning my daughter and I flew down here, Father's Day, June 18th. Once we got to the new place, the message was gone. I had to get a new cell phone because I no longer could take voice messages on that cell phone anymore. The phone worked fine, but you couldn't leave me a message. And I took it into 3 different places, and they said they'd never seen anything like it. Just the voicemail part was fried.
That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't thrown the phone out, because I know somewhere in that phone this message is buried. But I was wondering if he'd ever heard of this, because I know I'm not nuts, and you could hear it. You could hear my husband saying, Barbara, it's me. I'm okay.
I'm all right. What do you think, Jeffrey?
No, definitely not nuts there. What I think is happening is very similar to what you get with an EVP. In fact, the mechanism in a tape recorder is basically the same as the mechanism that's in a recorder like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have is apparently your husband trying to integrate his voice into the magnetic medium of the recorder, and apparently successful. However, because of the limitations that he's experiencing, not being in the physical realm anymore, it's difficult to get it in there as well as you would were he alive.
Right. That's why it sounded like it was so very, very far away.
Right.
And crackly. But you could hear with the cadence and the tone, you could hear that it was him, and you could clearly see it was 2 days after his funeral and the day after I had asked him, just tell me you're okay. And that was his message. I'm okay.
Right. Yeah, I think there's many different mechanisms that the departed can use to communicate with us. And if a person is used to using a cell phone a lot, that would be one way that they might try it. The fact that your phone is no longer capable of recording is also interesting, because it does sound as though in the attempt to create this vibration that he needed to get onto the phone, he actually hurt the system, the mechanism in some way. So I think that's a fascinating and interesting story.
And the fact that cells are being used or phone calls are being made, that tells you it could be electromagnetic.
Exactly.
They know how to tap into this.
Right. And in some ways, it seems almost easier on a cell phone than it would be on a regular landline, because you have so much more of an electrical component to it.
I wonder, when you get your cell bill, because I think online you can see the phone numbers that come in and go out.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it would say on the incoming.
Yeah, I would like to see the bill. I would think that'd be interesting. Be some excellent evidence.
It's got to have some kind of number attached to it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It should record just like a regular call would.
Wonder what that would be. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Jamie in Salt Lake City.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks.
Hey, here's my question. We look back at our great scientists and inventors such as Thomas Edison and Benjamin Franklin. Could possibly the brilliant minds of our time pass away and reincarnate in a past era? you know, we always say these people were ahead of their time and all of that. I was just curious if maybe that was one possibility.
You mean go backwards, reincarnate backwards?
Correct.
I don't know if I've ever really seen that in a past life regression or anything. I would think that you have people who have certain gifts, and they might carry that on into a future incarnation. So it's possible that, say, for example, Thomas Edison was the reincarnation of Archimedes.
Correct.
Okay. So it's not going backwards, but Archimedes was so far ahead of his time, and he may have been a reincarnation of someone even earlier in antiquity that we don't even know about.
Right.
But they just keeps carrying it on through these different people. So there could be a scientist today who's especially brilliant who may be the reincarnation of Edison. Now you just keep carrying on that same process through each incarnation.
I guess the possibilities are endless, right?
Absolutely. Infinite.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for being on the program. Next up, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jeff Danilek on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George. Aaron Stewart from Sierra Vista, Arizona.
Hi, Aaron.
I got a question about reincarnation, sort of to expand on what Heather mentioned earlier. Seeing how our population is larger in numbers of people than it was 400 years ago, just exactly, is there an infinite number of souls, and where exactly did they or we come from in you know, the beginning?
Well, to answer your question, yeah, there is an infinite number of souls. There's not the, you know, a certain number of them out there and they incarnate a number of times. There's an infinite number. Where they came from the beginning, you got to think in terms before human beings were on this planet, there was really not much reincarnating here. The reincarnating was going on elsewhere in the universe as far as sentient life forms. Once you know, primates evolved into basic sentient humans, then there was a vessel, if you will, for reincarnating here.
Okay.
And so that that's where they kind of migrated here, if you will, from other places in the universe. And as this society became more sophisticated and advanced, it made it a little bit easier to reincarnate and more useful too.
So there was no, like, one place where they were born, like the Big Bang Theory. This is where the universe was.
Right, or some soul-making machine somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good name for it.
See, actually, I believe that the universe contracts and expands. It's like reciprocating. It goes out, expands out, and it comes back into a single point, and then there's another Big Bang, and it keeps doing this over and over again like a beating of a heart.
Okay.
Over hundreds of billions of years each cycle. So, you know, wrap your brain around that and figure that this has been going on for an infinite number of centuries.
I guess we'll just have to find out later in our journey.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Oh, thank you very much. Very interesting. I love your work.
Thanks, Aaron. We appreciate you being part of the program. We will all find out in our journey, one way or another, Jeff. And part of me hopes that it's not just all emptiness and darkness and nothing. I don't think it is. How disappointing it would be if it was.
Yeah, I don't think you need to have to worry about that. I think that the universe is a place of joy and peace and beauty, and that we live in this realm, and we sometimes miss that because of we kind of turn off that sensor, and we miss the real beauty of the universe and the beauty of God, and that's what we have looked forward to.
Stay with us. We're going to be right back. We'll take final phone calls. Lots of you have been on hold for a long time. I'll try to get you in as quickly as I can. When we come back on Coast to Coast AM, I'm George Norrie. On our next Coast to Coast program, Richard Dolan, our guest, author, researcher on UFOs in the U.S. military. He'll be talking with us about what he believes to be the latest development in the structure of secrecy in the government. Why won't they tell us? And then we'll be right back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go. First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how's it going, George?
Life is good, thanks. You're welcome.
My name's Isaac. I'm calling out of Denver.
Okay, Isaac, take it away.
Now, I have a theory here. I've read from one of your guests in one of the books they wrote in the past. The gentleman's name is Boris Cottrell.
He's a great guy.
Yes, and he's written a very interesting book. The title is Jesus, King Arthur, and the Journey of the Grail. And one of the theories he talks about in there is the soul conversion theory. When you start off and you go from the resonant frequency of the soul, goes from 666, and it converts into 999 when it gets enlightened at the highest possible frequency. Now, personally, I think that's a very interesting theory, and I was wondering what Jeff thought about that.
Well, I'm not sure what frequency you're talking about. You're talking about 666 kilohertz, megahertz, or how did he explain that?
Well, in the book, he talks about that just being a resonant frequency. He doesn't talk about which way it's measured.
Okay. Well, I don't. I'm not really familiar with the gentleman's writings. I'm not really sure exactly how to answer it. However, I would say that I do believe that all life exists on a frequency, on a resonant level, and there's a good likelihood that as you evolve spiritually, that the resonant frequency does change. Whether it goes to a particular number or not, I suppose that's possible, but I do think that there is a change in the vibrational level as you become more enlightened, as you become closer to the divine. So there probably is some validity to this gentleman's theory that is something interesting to think about.
Okay, thank you. See, Maurice writes a lot about codes and things that he would find.
Okay.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm so glad. This is a great subject. I was one of the young children that I did remember that I lived before. And it was such a feeling. It was just like veils were pulled away, and I just knew that I had been on this earth before. And not too many people back then understood it, and, you know, and I couldn't really talk about it. But I found passages in the Bible that does say there is reincarnation. And when I show them, you know, people just, they don't know what to say or do. But you said you didn't believe, and then you found out too yourself. But my question is to you, do you think that we're in the last days? As they speak?
You know, I really am not a big believer in the end times scenarios. I think that life goes on regardless of what happens. If we're in the last days, maybe we're in the last days of being in spiritual darkness. And maybe
okay.
The new age is not going to be a physical new age, but maybe an age of a spiritual enlightenment that we're approaching. So maybe we are in the last days, the last days of ignorance.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, I appreciate you being part of the program. I've been a believer in end times. I sometimes think that, and that doesn't mean that end times is the end. I sometimes think it's the end of the old and in comes the new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I do think that we may be in the middle of it right now. Wild Card Line, you're up on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Great.
Great. I've got two points of disagreement with Jeff that I'd like to bring up. Number one, a few minutes ago you mentioned that when a house is haunted or a business is haunted or whatever, we need to go in there and help them along on their way. My feeling, and I've been a spiritualist minister for like 29 years, is that spirits have free will. So who are we to presume to know what they want to do? I mean, that's kind of my position on that matter as a point of difference. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I agree that they do have free will, and you're not really forcing them out per se. You're asking them to leave. So it's, the decision to leave is still up to them in a free will position. So I don't really have a conflict with that. But what I was talking about a little bit was maybe with angry or malevolent spirits, getting them to leave is a little bit more problematic, I suppose. And I'm not sure how you can really force them to leave. Even then, they would still have to want to leave at some point. So, you know, to answer your question, I think that you're right that you don't really want to force them out if you can avoid it. but there may be opportunities to get them to leave and persuade them and let them do it on their own.
Are you, what's your next work, Jeff? I mean, is it going to be in the same genre of the Ghosts reincarnation, or do you go back into like Atlantis?
Actually, I'm repackaging my first book, which was Reconsidering Atlantis, and having Llewellyn reprint it. So it's going to be kind of going in that direction again. It has kind of a different take on the whole theory of Atlantis.
Well, there's still a lot of interest in that, huh?
Oh, absolutely. It seems to be growing, in fact. The more we find out about what's out there, I think that really is probably bigger now than it was 10 years ago.
I think so, too. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George and Jeff. This is Chuck calling from Seattle.
Hi, Chuck.
I want to share a concern I have, George and Jeff, in a respectful manner. But long story short, when I was 29 years old, my first wife died unexpectedly of an aneurysm. And then 30 years later, I met a young girl. I was 22, she was 22, and I was like 59. And I wanted to believe in reincarnation so bad, I thought this was the reincarnation of my ex-wife. And it ruined me. The relationship lasted 4 years. It didn't work out. I was financially successful then, and I shed a lot of stuff on her that I, never could have done for my first wife because
sure.
She died young. But George and Jeff, all I'm saying is I think there's a real concern, and about talking about this very positively and never raising some issues for your listeners that you have to kind of be careful about believing that somebody else is reincarnated.
Well, that's why I brought up the question of the woman who thought she was Marilyn Monroe and what was she. But how did you, Chuck, think she was? And then obviously it sounds like you think she was not. What happened?
Well, first of all, I wanted to believe in reincarnation. And secondly, I think it was because of her age, and the sensual and the physical enlightenment, mm-hmm. of a young person again, and also just kind of her attitude and her very positive, outgoing, certain personality traits.
Well, now, how do you know she wasn't?
Well, I don't think she would have just dumped me. Over the age issue, we would have related to something,
Well, you may be right there. I mean,
yeah.
if she was, it might have worked out. If she wasn't, the age issue would have been a major factor.
Yeah, it was. And I'm an educated guy. It's just that I wanted to believe so much that this was a reincarnation of a person that I loved who died unexpectedly 30 years before. That it blinded me. I was blinded, I think, by things.
Let's address that, if we can, for a moment, Jeff. The downside of this.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. You have to be careful about presuming anything. The reason I believe, for example, my wife now was my niece in two lifetimes ago is a number of different reasons, not any one of them. Not because I want to believe it, but because of things I learned in a past life regression and other characteristics. In terms of believing that this woman was a reincarnation of your wife, you got to remember that we tend to be attracted to the same kind of people. With the same, similar personalities tend to attract us over and over again. That's why people tend to marry the same sort of people over and over again. So the fact that this woman had similar personality traits to your deceased wife is probably just a coincidence. And again, wanting to believe in reincarnation is a way of getting back something that you lost. I think a better approach to the whole subject is to recognize that you may be dealing with someone that you knew in a past life or even in this life, but the chances are also equally good that this is a new soul that you're encountering, and it's a whole different type of relationship, and just to be careful about it.
Wildcard line, you're up with us. Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, is Jeff there?
I sure am. He would not hang up on you.
Absolutely.
Okay. I've been waiting a while. Have you ever heard of an artist's energy being passed along if they have more work to do? Because I think I have a story that of a human going into an animal, and it relates to being an artist. And the energy that came through our family.
Tell me the story.
Okay, at the age of 5, a cat showed up at our house, and I named the cat Mrs. Robineau, not Fluffy or Blackie, Mrs. Robineau. Very specific, and it had to be a Mrs. And well, I did a Google search this year. I'm 40-some years old now, and I did a Google search on the name, if any of your listeners want to try it. And she turned out to be a really influential potter from the arts and crafts movement in the early 20th century. And in our family, we never had any potters, and I have quite the story about pottery being touched that my mother got a whole bunch of clay dropped off. She took a course, and then she thought, oh, I'll do this, and she got clay dropped off the same day my dad quit his job. So she went on to make these little people and sell them in order to feed our family. And then my brother became a potter, and now 30 years later, he's a master potter. And then my mom, 30 years later, found her son that she had given up for adoption. She walked into his living room, and there was one of her little people sitting on top of her television set. And as an adult, he always carried around this little sculpture and always put it on his TV set. And I just think that there can't be that much coincidence in the fact that how would I have named Mrs. Robineau, and she was a really influential potter, and pottery has really influenced our family.
How does this happen, Jeff?
Well, it sounds like a case of synchronicity. If you're familiar with that concept, I know that Jung talked about the idea that significant events come into our life on a purpose. There's some kind of a higher soul purpose in bringing all these elements together. The reason you named the cat, the name you gave it, was probably a part of this element trying to bring all of these pieces together. I don't believe the cat was really the reincarnation of this person, but there seems to be a link in here which your higher self is trying to get you to understand and appreciate. Does that make sense?
It could be. Could be. I'm going to try to do my own search and see if we can figure out who that person was. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Todd from Minneapolis.
Hi, Todd. Thanks.
Say, I'm calling on behalf of my father. He received a phone call from his dead father 24 years ago. They didn't tell me about it until about 6 months later, and I guess the conversation went like this. The telephone rang. He said it was a different kind of ring. He picked up the phone. It was dead. He hung it up. He started to walk away. It rang again, a funny ring. He picked it up, and he said this voice started talking. And I go, well, what do you say? And he said, you just started talking. And I said, what did you say to him? And he said, nothing. I said, why? He said, because I thought it was a very, very bad joke that someone was playing on him.
Right.
Anyway, so I said, well, okay, what did you say? And he said, well, he said, take care of your mother and your sister who was handicapped. He said, I never got a chance to say I loved you. And I knew I wasn't a very good father, but I'm telling you now that I do, always have. And he said he was looking forward to seeing David. But I mean, I guess he faded off after that. So he called my mom at work. She was about 10 minutes away. Had her come home. I guess my mom, you know, my dad was a man's man, you know, tough guy. And my mom said he was shooken up. He was humbled. He was, you know, very upset. But he said, call your father, because my mom's dad is named David. Just call him just to make sure he's okay. She called. He's fine. No big deal. I just thought he was dreaming. I didn't think he was making it up. I just thought he wanted to hear that his father had loved him. Well, 20 years later, no one in the family has died except my mother, my grandfather's wife, has died. No one else in the immediate family has died until 20 years later, my cousin committed suicide. And guess what his name was?
Oh, same thing.
David.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, this demonstrates the ability of loved ones to communicate and to still intervene in the lives of those behind them, left behind. So I think there was a message in there to kind of watch out for this David, you know, to keep him from getting to that point where he takes his own life. And either the message wasn't heeded or wasn't understood at the time and had the unfortunate consequences. But I think that's a very good example of how the dead still are active in our lives and still are involved in them.
So a lot with synchronicity too, Jeff.
Absolutely. That's all a part of it. I think that's one way that the paranormal world, the supernatural realm, communicates with us through coincidences.
West of the Rockies, you're up. Hi.
Hey, George. Man, much respect. I really like the show.
Thanks.
My name is Elo. I'm calling from Calvina, California.
Yeah.
Basically, my question is this. As a kid, I always used to run around and tell all my friends, you know, it's just kind of crazy. I don't know if you're familiar with David Icke.
Oh, very well. He's been on the show before with me.
Okay, right on, right on. All right. Well, when I figured out what David Icke research was about, I was really flipped because as a kid, I used to run around telling all my friends, I'm a reptile and I'm really not human. I just look like I am. And by the time I hit David Icke's research, I was probably 20 years old. I'm only 24 now. So the last 4 years, I've really been bugging out on that. And I just had a friend that passed away tonight. So I don't think it's no coincidence that all this is going on the radio tonight, and this is the first time I've ever got in on the radio. So I just want to know what was your input and thoughts on that, and if you could drop any wisdom on.
Well, I need a little help here. I'm not familiar with the work of David Icke.
Well, David's pretty good. David has been a writer out of London for some time now, and he has written a lot about a lot of these subjects, including his belief, of course, of reptilian life. Really not something I think you can answer as a question. It was more of an observation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that they are someone or something else. Now, with 30 seconds to go, if somebody thinks that they've been reincarnated, if it's bothering them or affecting their life, what do you suggest they do?
Well, probably the best thing to do is just to not dwell on it anymore. Go on with your life as it is, and don't worry about what you were in a past life. If it really becomes a problem, then you can probably go to a past life hypnotist, see what they come up with. And sometimes that's another way of healing it once you bring it to the surface. So it's really up to the individual to do what they think is the right thing.
Jeff, thanks for being on the show this Labor Day night. Appreciate it.
Thanks, George. It's been a lot of fun.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.